Like many occupations, candidates in training for ministry have for a number of years now been encouraged to take a Myers-Briggs personality test and a test which looks at your response to conflict. These tests are taken by responding to sliding scales of opposing attitudes within certain circumstances, drawing out personality traits or the ways in which you respond in a conflict situation. And they hopefully give a rounded picture of the way any individual might respond to the world in which they live. For those who haven't taken a Myers-Briggs test, at the heart of the test is the notion of four preferences. Do you respond to people and things or over ideas and information? Do you work with facts and reality rather than possibilities and potential? Do you deal in logic or truth or values and relationships? Is your lifestyle well structured or do you go with the flow? I don't want to say too much about the test, partly because I'm not entirely convinced by it. However, I have found it helpful in my ministry, because where I have found it helpful is when I do recognise a particular trait as being strong in my lifestyle or my way in dealing with people, I have learnt to be aware of that so that I might respond differently. That's particularly important in conflict, because my preferred option is to avoid, and I think many of the Kirk session will probably realise that my preferred option for conflict is to avoid, and I have to work really hard to actually recognise that sometimes you have to tackle the problem. It's not just when you're training for ministry that this test appears. It now appears when you are going to be one of those people who has the opportunity to accompany someone who is training, so that you can recognise the traits that they might hold and the traits that you might hold. Surprisingly, our last assistant and I were the same personality type and the same conflict resolution type, which made for some interesting Monday mornings. But why talk about these tests, particularly when we don't necessarily think that they really suggest who we are? I think they do offer an opportunity to think about how we live in relationship with others and how we live in relationship to God. As we approach the Lord's table, the thoughts of living in relationship with those around come to the fore, because we gather round a community table celebrating with the past, present and future of the church. My feeling is that when you heard the readings, there might have been a sense that neither seemed to be very celebratory. Not for a meeting of people coming into the Lord's presence to feast on his word and on his grace. Where is the joy in watchmen and squabbles, in sentinels and socialising? With the repetition of the wickedness of humanity and the warnings that the people of Israel should be turning their lives around towards God, the passage from Ezekiel seems quite dark. Add in the notion that the prophet is being made the watchman for the house of Israel, and it carries the weight of a concentration camp scenario. But there is hope and potential to be found in the reading. This chapter in Ezekiel begins a transition in the book. It moves from threat to compassion. The prophet Ezekiel becomes the watchman for the people of Israel, standing at the city walls as an early warning system, faithfully passing on the words of God. Reading on in the chapter, we discover that despite the warnings of Ezekiel, the city of Jerusalem will fall. The people of Israel do not turn around. But the overriding message is of God's care and compassion, a God still interested, even when people no longer listen. Ezekiel is assured that he will not fail in the action of watchmen, because a rhetorical thought runs through the whole of the passage. If a sentinel warns of an invasion and people choose to do nothing, who is to